I'm invited to present her views concerning the action of the revisions of the tax abatement guidelines. All who desire to be heard shall now record their names with the Secretary of the Board of Trustees, Adrian Cavio, and only those who have recorded will be heard. Is there anyone that wishes to speak? Since there is no discussion on the proposed revision of the tax abatement guidelines and criteria, we will close this public hearing. And we're going to reconvene our regular meeting, and Ms. Beck has agreed to give us our invocation today.
Lord, thank you so much for another day. Lord, thank you so much for the rain. Lord, thank you for the opportunity to work together as a community to for the betterment of Howard College and the Big Spring community and all the communities that we serve. Lord, I just pray that everything we think, say, and do will honor and glorify you. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Thank you very much. Okay, do we have any guests we need to recognize?
Well, of course, Mark Willis, you know Mark.
We know Mark.
And then Tony Scarborough with Star Dodge, and he's here with the Leadership Big Spring.
Welcome, Tony.
I think the rest of the people in here, you know.
All right. Very well. We'll move on then to communications to the board. Anyone here that wishes to communicate to us right now? Assuming there are no commitments or questions, we will proceed with our regular meeting then. Just a bit agenda item on routine matters. I think you've had a chance to read through those. So all the board members that have read through those, do you have any questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve those.
Motion.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All of you say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Routine matters are approved. Unfinished business, we don't have any, so we're going into new business and under visiting future and direction.
All right, Mr. Chairman. Tax abatement guidelines and criteria and resolution, of course, that was what the hearing was just about. As you know, this is something that you're required to do every 2 years. We already have guidelines and criteria in place that you have approved before, but they are to be reviewed, and so it's time to do that. And basically no changes. We're in the guidelines and criteria except some dates and time or individuals that are on the board. Other than that, the policy is basically the same. And so this, again, is looked at after legislative sessions to see if there's any kind of change. Also, would give credit to the Big Spring EDC for taking the lead on keeping the guidelines and criteria up to date. They work with an attorney who specializes in this, Audie Scimbiato, can never get his last name out, and he reviewed all the guidelines and criteria for the different taxing entities, and the one for the college was in good order. And so we're prepared to recommend it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I need to approve those.
You need to approve it, and then by doing that, you will also be doing the resolution, and you'll sign off on that, and then the guidelines and criteria will be on the website.
Okay, so I have a motion to approve this tax statement.
So move.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
All right.
That could be tax abatement hearing considerations.
All right. So as a part of this process, then, whenever you have the ability to provide tax abatements, then occasionally you're going to have some. Somebody come forward, a business that's going to come forward and have an interest, and you have some interest in, from a company, DMA, Dujarmi, Macmillan and Associates, Incorporated. They'll be doing business in Howard County, Recover Howard, LLC. And they have submitted information according to the guidelines and criteria for there to be consideration at a later time of a tax abatement. As a part of the process, we have put the notice in the paper. And so that then would be brought to you at the May 23rd meeting. And at that meeting, they will be here if you have any questions. Another part of the process is that the county, Howard County, has to set up a reinvestment zone if there is going to be any abatement in that area. And so that is going to happen on May the 9th. There's also, in the meantime, between now and the board meeting on the 23rd of May, as a part of the guidelines and criteria, there is a tax abatement committee that we have in place for these processes in Howard County, and that group will meet sometime on May the 11th. And there's representation from the Howard College. In the past, Chairman John has attended, and then I'm not sure exactly how they're going to fit the rest of the committee together, but they're working on that. And so we will be having some more information about that. This is basically one of the companies that has expressed an interest and that you had some information shared with you about at the last meeting as a part of how we're allowed to discuss that in an executive session. It's now out in the public as far as that process. There is still another company that has expressed interest that is not as far along as this particular company is, and so we may have some information to bring back about that. Mark, would there be anything you would add?
No, that's at 2 o'clock on the 11th.
Okay.
The committee is going to meet at our offices, and I would say that the committee is just an advisory committee. They do not set any real parameters or anything like that. Really, the thing behind the committee is to make sure the city, county, school district, everybody knows what's going on. And in these two cases, the city, they're out of the city limits. There won't be any city participation. It's always a good idea to have right hand knowing what the left hand's doing. So that's why this committee was formed years ago, long before I got here. I think it's a wise thing to do. Everybody needs to know
that
we're
needs
all
to
being asked to do the same thing, basically.
Right. And then also in conjunction with that, that we have sent out the required notices to Howard County and Big Spring ISD to let them be aware that the board would be considering on the 23rd a possible tax abatement. Again, doesn't affect them, but it's just, again, an awareness factor that we have. Yes, sir.
It's something I need to attend.
Yes, sir. Okay. On May 11th at 2.
May 11th, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So there's no vote on that. That's just, again, just keeping you informed that the process is continuing.
It's going to be happening.
It will be at Big Spring 80s.
Okay. At the downtown.
Downtown. Mm-hmm.
Chamber of Commerce building.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm assuming that. It's your office?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Anybody who wants to come, welcome. We'll move to the big conference room if we need to. It's one of those things that transparency is a good thing.
Right.
Well,
yeah, I need more details. I need more details on this.
The board can come if y'all don't mind having a forum there.
Yeah, we can't do that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's big.
Yeah. Nope, I'll be late.
What time is it going to happen?
It's going to happen at 2 p.m.
I just missed it or something.
Sorry?
I just missed it somewhere or something.
No, he just told us that it was going to be 2.
I know, we're hot. Does that know what time?
Oh, 2 p.m.
2 p.m.
2 p.m.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I'm sorry I'm asking questions, delaying things. Shows you how touchy I am, I guess. Okay, our next item on agenda is COVID-19 response status 24.
All right. As a part of what we do every month, again, 24 times we've done this. And so, as you know, we only talk about the things that have changed, so I'll flip through this really quick. As far as COVID confirmations, this last reporting period have had a little bit more going up in the area. Really had a very long dry spell. We've had just a little bit of increase, not much at all, on our San Angelo and Big Spring campuses. But again, it's still very not as active as what we were experiencing in the past at all. We continue to, as far as legislative outreach, we're doing a lot of that. We can virtually continuing to do that. We have a lot of activity still going on with the grants, and that is impacting for sure Brenda and several others who are involved in the reporting aspects of the grants that we have received relative to the pandemic. So that continues, and that's just, again, reference for you. We also have planned, based on the fact that we are still in yellow status, as y'all know, the alert status, we, as mentioned last time, we would start preparing as far as all of the year-end ceremonies. We would start preparing those accordingly, so we're doing that. And the pinning ceremonies and graduation ceremonies are all, and all that's listed there for you as far as what's happening there. You had that on your calendar too, but again, we are, and those will be live streamed for individuals that are interested in participating virtually, and that could be a student or their family members. As far as college services, again, things continue to happen as far as the Department of Ed. On April the 6th, they did announce another extension of the pause on the student loan repayment in interest and collections until August 31st of 2022. And again, that relates, you know, that's pandemic related. We have had, we're now being able to provide GED testing on the Big Spring campus, and we've been approved as a Pearson testing site, so we can get back to that. We're continuing to watch any guidelines that come from either the federal level or the state level. Still, there's still some interest at times, individuals that want to help people that have been impacted by the pandemic, and we'll work with those scenarios. The prison operation, as reported last month, we were able to start our classes back the beginning of base year on March 1, and we have been delivering actively. They have had a change in their alert level at the prison, but that has not impacted us. And so we're being able to go ahead and deliver those courses, and of course, that is great since we're in the middle of a base year. And I believe, one more, just about what we've already done in the way of ceremonies. The Hawk Evening of Excellence last week, the Phi Theta Kappa STK Sigma Delta Kappa induction ceremony on the Big Spring campus, which included Lamisa as well, was held, and we did this, the yellow status. Then the final thing, we are researching how we can use the remaining funds. I've mentioned that several times, and we're getting close to having some projects for consideration that will align with the requirements of the CARES funding that is still available to us until June of 23. So we'll be coming back to a future board meeting with some of that information. That would be it.
All right. Thank you. Takes care of the Open Higher College update also. So
yes, sir.
Big Spring, I think, Lamisa, Wood, and Angelo. Next action item on would be the excess.
Student success. Yes. And we've got Brian here to give you a report on student debt measures. As he's coming forward, as you know, this is part of what you ask as far as what we do in the way of accountability. And so he's going to be sharing some information relative to the debt.
Thank you very much. So, like Dr. Spark said, one of the measures that we are kind of looking at now is student debt measures. Again, you know, we know when students enter into college, there's a lot of factors that determine how they finish or not. Some of that boils down to can they afford college, and also what kind of funds or hours do they accumulate when they finish here at Howard College. The data I'm talking about today is a district-wide data, so it's looking at data not only from the Big Spring campus, but the San Angelo, La Mesa, and the Swiss campus as well. On that second slide, when you look at that, these measures are coming from the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, or we call it the CB for short. It's from their accountability page. This is data that we submit to the CB, and they collect all that data in terms of hours it takes to graduate, debt that's coming in, and so forth. And it gives all that information not only from Howard College, but all the other 49 colleges in the state of Texas. With this student debt, this is part of the 60 by 30 measure for the coordinating board, which is part of their strategic plan, which is to reduce and have manageable debt for students when they complete their degree at a community college or at a university. The nine metrics that we're looking at today, again, are located for all 50 community colleges. So we'll see a statewide average of that data, but we'll also compare our data to our group that we are grouped in, which is the small college. And the list of those small colleges are located at the bottom of in a couple of screens. So these are the nine metrics we're looking at. When we look at the third slide, what we're looking at there is we want to not only look at what the state wants to complete, but how does that relate back to our strategic plan that we've been discussing and looking at since June. Again, what we are focused on is providing access and to also, you know, provide student success. And so if we can reduce the amount of debt that students are receiving or reduce the amount of credit hours to a degree and reduce debt measures, then we're helping our students succeed. And so that ties back into our strategic plan and also our vision of enriching the lives of the people that we are serving. When looking at these nine metrics today, we're going to be looking at it in terms of a color coordination system. Again, these metrics we're looking at, we're going to see Howard College's data compared to the statewide average, compared to our small college grouping. And so when we look at these, we're going to look at, are we achieving the goal, which is that we are below not only the state average, but we're also below the small college average. And if we are, that indication will be green. If we are in the yellow, which is in the acceptable threshold, which means that we are below at least one of those, state average or small college. If we are not where we need to be, where we are below or above the state average and the small college average, it'll be highlighted in red, which means that for us, that's something that we need to improve on and find ways to better help our students. As you see at the bottom of that page, that is where we're looking at the small college, where you can see all the small colleges and schools that we are comparing to. And then again, the statewide average will be posted there as well. So if we move to the next slide, again, we're going to start looking at these nine metrics that the CB accountability report looked at, which is the student debt as a percentage of wage. So again, once a student gets an associate's degree, are they able to then start working and pay off that debt compared to their salary? If we look at this, you can see a trend for the past 4 years. The past 3 years, we have been below the state average and the small college average. It means we're doing good. Their debt is in an acceptable range compared to what they are making. This mostly applies to our associates of applied sciences. If you think about a student who completes their RN degree and then enters to work, that's the percentage that they're kind of averaging in terms of what they have to pay back in student loans. That would be any other more business or career and technical education options. You can see we've done good at decreasing that over the years. There's a 10% decrease looking at it from 2016 down to 2019 in terms of that data. So we are doing very well at making a change and reducing how much debt is part of their salary. Moving on to the next slide, you can see excess semester credit hours. Again, when we look at this, we're looking at associate degrees. All associate degrees should be at 60 hours to complete. So if you have more than 60 hours to complete your associate, you are spending more time on coursework than you need to finish your degree. Again, this has been a big push, not only through the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, but also through the Texas Association of Community Colleges, through the Pathways Project, to reduce the amount of hours students are taking to get to their degree plan. We have done very well in cutting that down. We are in the yellow state, though, means that we have met a threshold, but we haven't got below the state average, or we got below the state average, but we're not below our small college average. We're down by 1 hour compared to our small college. But you should know, from 2017 to 2021, we've been able to drop six credit hours off of the student's completion of an associate. Six credit hours is two regular classes, and so we have done some really good job at reducing that load down. So again, less classwork is less tuition, less debt towards the student. The next slide is the percentage of graduates with debt. This is one, again, that we have two graphs. One is comparing to our certificate, students who completed certificate program. That's a certificate one, a certificate two. The graph on the right is students that are an associate, which would be an associate of applied science, an associate of science, associate of arts, and so forth. We have done really well on the certificate side, in which we both the state and the small college average in terms of debt per certificate. That's big. We've been in yellow for many years. We've now gotten under the green. The associate side is the side that we need improvement on. A lot of our students, about 40% I believe, are finishing out with some form of debt. So we are above both the state average and the small college, and that's an area for us to improve on and look at how we can get that better. Moving on to the next slide is the tuition and fees. When we look at that, again, we are looking at how much our tuition fees are compared to the small college average and the statewide average for both for taking 30 hours. Mostly this is just looking at tuition. You can see ours has been pretty steady. Small college has raised up and so has the state average. So we've done good in terms of what we are charging compared to what the small college average is and what the state average is for 30 hours. The next slide is looking at graduates with no more than 3 credit hours. So again, how many are finishing with 63 or less hours? So again, you're getting real close to that 50 degree mark, so we're 50 credit hour mark that we want to get to see. We had a slight dip or increase in 2020. Again, we've had some COVID issues there that probably allowed that bump up a little bit. But again, we are in a threshold where we are below the state average, but not the small college average. So again, we have made some increase. If you look at the way, we've had a 5% increase in students with 63 hours or less since 2018. We're doing really good at improving. Average debt of graduates with loans. You can see the main concern there. There was a big spike in 2020. I'll talk a little bit at the end here that I got some feedback from financial aid, from the business office, from advisors about why we would have these kind of numbers. But, you know, we're 2020 again. There was COVID that really affected students. Again, there was a lot of people who lost jobs. There was people who lost family members and income. Students still also receive funds through our COVID first funds, I believe. But again, you can see it really impacted students. After 2020, you can see we dropped right back down. So I think the COVID pandemic really kind of played a big key factor in there. But again, we are overall, you know, on a decrease on that. Moving on to the next slide is, again, we're looking at students who have completed total student credit hours, and then also who successfully completed student credit hours. We did drop a little bit in 2020 in terms of the student credit hours that were completed. You can see from the numbers here that we dropped down 10%. So 10% of our students pretty much withdrew from the course by that time. And then another 10% on top of that successfully completed. So about 80% completion successfully completing a course. So you're down to about, you know, one out of five courses didn't do too well. Again, looking at how we were affected that year by COVID, you really had students who were transitioning to online learning, so that became a little bit difficult for some. Changing and having to deal with being sick and so forth may have affected that grade average. So we're hoping we can get that back up. And that's an area that we've accepted, we have an acceptable threshold, but we can improve on. The next slide is time to degree. I think what you see here is, again, looking at the what we're trying to do in terms of pathways, Texas Association Community Colleges push on that. We have done really well at reducing that time to degree from 2017 to 2021. We're almost taking off a full year there. And so that is really good that students are finishing sooner and not in college for a long period of time. And so that is something I think is really good to look at, that we have, this is the first time we've equaled our small college average and we're below that state average. So we got into the green for the first time this year. So we've been steadily improving, and we've now gotten to a point that we are at that same level. So that is a really good push. Student credit hours to degree, again, looking at that, we've reduced that down to 8 hours. And again, that's like two science courses. So that is also, again, when you think about the debt measures of tuition and other fees, reducing that amount of hours, it's really going to help the student. And so we've been able to push that down. We're still not below both of them yet. We got to get a little bit better in terms of the small college, but we are below the statewide average, and we are making gains on the small college. Moving on to the last slide, is this an overall view about how we did, if you want to color coordinate that. Again, green to me shows that we have done very well because we're both underneath the state average and our small college average. Yellow being that we were just below one of them, but we are making good progress. And then red is an area that we need to improve. So again, looking at the synopsis of everything, I think we've done really well in terms of trying to get better at reducing our debt for our students. Finally, as I mentioned, we collected data, we look at this data. I want to get that data in the hands of people who work with me. I want to get their response in terms of why are we seeing these measures. So again, I think COVID played a big hit on terms of loans. We dealt with relief funds to try to help. But again, with loss of income, family members, and so forth, I think that caused that peak in 2020, and I'm hoping that it'll drop back down. With LEADS, we're also working in terms of helping students budget. We've been also doing things in terms of financial planning, doing a reality fair check in terms of, you know, what you do with all, you know, what loans and how they affect you, does that affect you in terms of after you finish college. So we've been trying to help students understand that loans may not be the best option, you know, or if so, how do you be responsible with loans? The business office has always been encouraging more about, you know, can we do a payment plan for students to help pay for their tuition rather than get a loan to cover their tuition. This summer is the first time that we're able to actually help students do a payment plan for their response. So we're hoping that will reduce the amount of loans throughout the summer. Of course, we always encourage students to apply for scholarships, you know, make sure they get their financial aid Pell Grant done. And so also, you know, in terms of advising, we've been pushing pathways since 2018 in terms of reducing that time to degree. We've been pushing more holistic advising towards their degree. We've also been installing an automatic graduation for students, so we're keeping track of when students graduate. Sometimes students are not knowing that they can graduate, and so they might take additional hours. So we're able to help them see when they are done, help them focus on that transition and moving on to their next level. That's pretty much all I have today. Does anybody have any questions on that?
That's a very good report.
Mm-hmm. I hope you see what the color coding that Brian has worked on. That's something that we're trying to start doing, and some of the things we're going to be bringing forward to you, like basically a dashboard kind of effect, and so that you'll, you know, it's easier to understand. Yeah. We think.
Thank you, Brian. That's very good.
That's only with us. Okay.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to advise them, keep them on their paths so that they're not wasting a lot of time and money at the if they're going to complete or continue in a four-year degree. So hopefully, though, what happens through our leads process and all the things that we're doing, we're helping students understand the importance of get your plan down. What are you going to be doing? Know what you're going to how you're going to spend your time. Don't take access credit. When you do, this is what happens. You know, that kind of thing.
Starting with the high schoolers too, or are they in the cohorts as well?
We're the cohorts are not in this data. Dual credit, not
okay.
But we are, you know, transitioning what we're doing with Pathways with the Making Learning program.
Yeah.
You know, looking at how do we help these students transition from high school to college.
Cool.
Awesome.
Question about the 60-hour goal. I'm sure you're aware there are exceptions to that, including
yes.
our ITP program. So I hope that if our ITP students are graduating with 65, they're counted as meeting the criteria as opposed to not.
It would just depend. I mean, there are a few out there that are above the 60, but again, the majority of our students who graduate are associates of science, associates of art, but that's where the you know, I would say almost 400 of them. So the 65 would kind of counteract it, but I think, you know, we'll see it kind of spread out.
That's a SWID program. I don't know if y'all are picking up on that with Danny talking.
Thanks, Brian. Very good. All right. Next item on the agenda is community and work for the workforce development.
We're going to take you down to performance excellence.
Okay, performance excellence. Tuition and fees, Harrison.
And Mr. Chairman and board members, if it's okay, I'd like to kind of do student roundtable reports and then push back into the tuition and fee comparison. Is it okay?
Yes, ma'am.
So with the roundtable reports, as you know, we complete those roundtables on all of the campuses, both the fall and spring semesters, and so what we're bringing to you today is the information that came from the recent roundtables and our first answers to the students' questions, concerns, whatever. We use these as an opportunity for our students. They're part of the team. How do we make the college experience better? And so and it varies by the campus as far as how those student groups are put together that come in. But again, we encourage them to feel comfortable. You know, sometimes students are uncomfortable to bring up something, and we basically say we want you to. This is constructive criticism. We don't talk about, obviously, employees or people, you know, any kind of people, but how can we make things better, your college experience better? So, again, we try to create an environment of be critical. Let's be constructive but critical. And so we work on with those students then in those sessions. Then we take that information and it is given out to the different areas of responsibility depending on what the topic is. We get back and those students then we come up with our first answer and we post it up so that the students that participated and those that are interested can see it. And we go to work on it. Sometimes it's an easy fix. Some things that come up in the roundtables, literally, they may not happen for 5 or 6 or 7 years. And sometimes we tell students we just simply can't do it. It's, you know, too much money or something like that. But it is a continuous quality improvement process, and it works well. And so this is the spring. We will, by the time we have the fall roundtables, we will continue working on these through the summer, and we will, when we present to the students in the fall, they'll see what we were able to accomplish in the months that follow. So you've had an opportunity to see those, and then that ties in with tuition and fees, the tuition and fee comparisons. We did in the conversations that we had with our students on the San Angelo campus, we did have some students asking about the differences between the tuition for in-district students and out-of-district. And let me explain that, again, y'all know, but sometimes we forget, in-district tuition is for students that live in a taxing area. That's state law. So those are in-district rates. Students that are out-of-district are those that do not live in the taxing district. And then, of course, non-resident, they're not residents of the state of Texas. And so our out-of-district students then in our college district are going to be in all the counties outside of Howard County, because Howard County is the only taxing district or taxing county. And then the other students then in those other counties will pay out-of-district. Then when you get outside of the service area, that will be at any of the counties in the state of Texas. So those are the differences in tuition. That did come up, and the students were, and that has come up before. I'm curious about why the tuition is greater in the other on the other campuses or whatever. And of course, that relates to the fact that the students that are living in district, then they are in the county, in our case, Howard County, those individuals pay taxes. So you can have a family that is, they're paying taxes, as well as if they have a student that is going to college, then they're paying in-district tuition. So that's what happens. You have people outside of Howard County are going to pay more, but they're also, they don't have the tax. And so we look at those kinds of things, and that's why in-district tuition is less. And so then what we do is we compare how we look with tuition. We generally, we have tried to stay at state average, or we look at how we comp out with the small colleges. Brian mentioned the small college group, and we comp to see how we look there. We comp with a peer because sometimes we feel like that we're not exactly in that small group, kind of comp out, and we try to look at peer colleges. And then we also look at West Texas colleges. So when we get to the catalog section, we're going to be recommending that we increase tuition. So I'm kind of pulling all this in together so you'll see why and what we're doing. When we've looked at our tuition and fee comparisons, we had not increased tuition. I think it was 4 or 5 years before last year. Then last year we increased our in-district by $5, our out-of-district and our non-resident by $10. So basically for a person last year taking 15 hours, then that would have been in-district, they would have been seeing a $75 increase, and 15 hours, and for out-of-district they were seeing $150. And so that was because we had not raised tuition in a while. So looking at what our scenario is, you know, we've been talking about for the last, several years that we are wanting to address faculty pay. And again, we'll remind you all, when we look at our revenue streams for our different campuses, it's all different. And so it gets complex at times because how we're trying to work our budgets, because if you remember, all the budgets are separate. We work on them in the summer, pull them together in one budget. Our SWID budget we keep separate, but the other campus budgets we separate out. And so we have a complex approach, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to maintain fairness at the different campuses and what we're trying to do. And so in looking at the goal, we're going to be working on this, we'll be bringing information back in the meetings that will be taking place over the next 4 or 5 months as we work on what we're doing with our policy relative to faculty pay, then when we move into the budget, and then ultimately have the budget approval in August, It's a procedural process. Well, a process. It's going to take several months to address some of the things we're working on. But it relates back to what we're trying to do with faculty pay. And so what we are going to be recommending after we've looked at our comps, we are not recommending an increase in our in-district tuition this year, but we are going to be recommending an increase in out-of-district and non-resident tuition again. And we're recommending going up $10 again. Again, we have we've been looking at how we look state average, peer, small, and so we're going to be recommending that. We always, in the month of March or April, we do these comps whenever we're looking at any kind of a recommendation on tuition, so you'll see why we're recommending it, where we're coming from, and so that is what we're going to be recommending. When we get to catalog changes, that will be the recommendation. So do you have any questions about that? And again, it's all part of that bigger picture. We're going back to our San Angelo campus. We do not have all of the revenue streams that community college funding is based on because we do not have a taxing revenue stream on our San Angelo or La Mesa campuses. So the only way that we can increase revenue on those campuses is going to be through tuition, or if we have an increase in contact hour generation and we get some funding from the state level that provides that kind of an increase in revenue. We may get in like donors locally that will give us money for certain things, but for the most part, the way we increase revenue is going to be for San Angelo and La Mesa is going to be based on tuition and contact hour generation. The Big Spring campus is what the way the community colleges funding is designed. I call it a four-legged stool. It's contact hour generation, so the money that's coming from the state, tuition and fees, taxes, and local donors. But we don't have that for our San Angelo and La Mesa campuses. When you get to our SWID campus, it's a straight appropriation from the state, and we have been asking for increase in the state appropriation for our SWID campus last couple of years, or couple of sessions, to address some of that. We do not have that accomplished yet, but what we are seeing happen for our SWID campus is that we are beginning to see increases in, after the pandemic, we're beginning to see enrollment, our numbers are looking better, looks like people, we're going to see students wanting to return for our fall semester, and the way that our funding at SWID works, our non-resident or out-of-state students, they pay significantly more than any of the students that live in the state of Texas. If we had a student from Oklahoma wanting to attend our San Angelo, Big Spring, or La Mesa campuses, they would pay much less out-of-state tuition than if they were going to our SWID campus, because the SWID campus non-resident tuition is basically directed by the state, because the state sets tuition for out-of-state students for universities, and for SWID, we follow that. The coordinating board, we have to follow what the coordinating board gives the universities for out-of-state tuition. So, therefore, any student from outside of the state of Texas, deaf or hearing, will pay university rates for out-of-state. But if they are in the state of Texas, deaf or hard of hearing, their tuition is waived. Hearing students will then pay the tuition numbers, or what we're setting are asking you to do today. I know that's very confusing, but all then drives our revenue and for the different campuses as we're putting it all together. And so I wanted you to understand why we are recommending the increase in tuition. Okay?
Okay. Questions or comments on that? We'll go on to our next item, which is purchasing. And Steve's got, I'm going to go, Steve, you'll do A and B for us before we vote. We've got a lot to vote on, so therefore I'd just let's start with A and B.
Okay.
You both of them, if you would please.
Let me update you with this.
While Steve is passing that out, I know we gave you quite a bit of information in board book, and then this is, I mentioned that we were updating information, still working with the company, so you'll take them through it.
Sure. The difference between what I handed you and probably what's in on your screen is two things. It's on question number 9, the summer pricing. On this, it's $7.25 for the single lunch and a meal ticket for $58.65 for 10 meals. And then that very last item, the third line on the daily student rate is $15.84, and that is for the student meal plan for the fall and spring semesters with no upfront money. When we first started negotiating,
Steve, you might want to take them all back to the RFP process.
Okay. When we first started negotiating, you'll notice that RFP number is 21-0011. That 21 is the year 21, which started last year with this. We've been working with three different food contractors, and we're looking, again, as we always do, for best value for our students. one thing we learned, or that was quoted to us by the food people, they said that 50% of the students' choice of coming to a university based on the kind of dining service. So we're recognizing the importance of that, and we're trying to enhance that for students to get more students. When we began with it, we began with upfront, what they call upfront money, which was done, I guess, more prevalent in the past than it is now. It's still being done. But along with the contract they were giving, you can see one company was giving us They were putting $250,000 upfront that we could use to remodel the kitchen, buy new equipment and all that. The other company is $262,000, and then you can see the other one is $75,000 for year six. But with that comes the cost, so we're actually paying interest on it. And we determined that that we had the resources through our budget or through the fund balance to do that. So as of today, we pull that out because it's a better value and cost to for the college not to get that. So that's one thing that came on this contract. And we were negotiating with them up to like 10:30 this morning, so that's why the new deal. We had a committee that looked at all of this through the whole process. They scored it using our scoring rubric that we put out with the RFP. There were employee representatives from the dorm, from SWID, from Howard College, and that included faculty, coaches, and administrators. So we tried to get a wide value or a wide range of people to provide input and make a selection, a recommendation. And like I said, we were working up to 10:30 this morning. They sent us a draft with our the changes we made today. It has to be approved by their company, has to go through legal, but we feel comfortable with where it sits right now with what's going on. You can see in there that the three companies was Great Western, Aramark, and HHS, and our recommendation to you is Great Western, which is the company we're with right now. The rate is $15.84 for the fall semester and spring semester for the students, employees have a $28.50 meal card for 10 meals, which comes out to $2.50 per meal, which is not a bad value at all. They offer the $58.65, like I said, during the summer, and then summer pricing is $7.25 for college-related. So that's where we are on that with that recommendation.
Okay. And so, and let me remind y'all, too, as what Steve was talking about as far as the committee, because what you have in front of you, you know, the first thing is with an RFP, you go through and as he said, you know, we're looking at the three companies, and then you have the information where we comped it between those three companies. And then from that, the committee had made the recommendation to go forward with Great Western. Because it's an RFP, we could keep negotiating with looking at the one that was Great Western, because that's, it had already bubbled to the top that Great Western was the one that there was the most interest in. And so then from that point, I think it's important to get across that we did not ask those other companies for information relative to taking the investment out and seeing what the numbers would look like, as we were already going down the path of looking at Great Western Dining as the best value at that point. Okay, so I just wanted you to understand that, how that process works.
And for various reasons, the other two were eliminated, things that we liked or didn't like about them. And I will also say that Great Western, positive for them, there's Odessa College, Mellon College, Snyder. I mean, there's a lot of colleges that have the same Great Western Dining vendor. And our athletes, when they travel there, can use their meal cards with those places and not have to pay for it, and those people that come to our campus can use them as well. So that was the point. That was one point that they had as well.
How do the students feel about the food? Have we ever done a survey or any?
Oh, yeah.
We have a food committees on both the SWID and the Big Spring campuses. Generally, as far as the roundtables, it will come up during the roundtables through the years. So we get student input. The food committees, basically, you know, the students can submit, you know, concerns, be a part. So.
And they have. And I'll give you one example. I think the last roundtable, it was a deal about oatmeal. They want some kind of special oatmeal, so they're putting brown sugar raisins in. So she offered them two kinds of oatmeal now, the plain and the other. So they listen to them, and they make recommendations. And they said, I want to check for
them. The students are fairly happy with it.
And during this process, we've seen improvements. And I think if you took a survey, you know, what's your rating today versus what it was quite a few months ago, I would say it was a
Has anybody, it seems like Aramark was the runner-up. Not real close, but the runner-up. Has anybody ever gone, I don't know where the closest place is to the Aramark services. Has anybody ever tried the food?
Yes, we have, and I will say we've had experience with Aramark in the past. We had a grant that was by the USDA, and it was through the Howard Cottage for the daycare center and for the meals that were provided, and they had to have nutritional labels, and Great Western was not able to comply with the requirements of that, so we contracted with Aramark through the ISD, and they provided the food. And so some of the ratings and evaluation, well, a lot of Aramark's thing came from our experience in the past with dealing with the food that we were getting from Aramark with the daycare center. So we had experience with their food service and their people that way.
But I agree with you. I mean, yeah, I think that when students are looking at where they're going to go to college, they look at a lot of factors. And food is one of them. It's you're going to be living up if you're living on campus. And so, you know, we want them to be reasonably happy. Cost is important, but cost isn't everything.
No.
Yeah, because, you know, you definitely want them to be pleased with what they're getting. If we obviously students want to go, you know, off campus and eat something sometime, or, you know, they want to go get pizza at Pizza Inn or whatever it is, but if we're seeing a mass exodus of students go to local fast food restaurants because the food here isn't so good, then that's not a good thing. I mean, so, I I'm not personally on campus enough to notice how much of that goes on.
And it, without a doubt, I mean, anytime you go on any campus anywhere in America and you ask about, so how's your food, it's generally, there's going to be students that are not going to like it. It's not home cooking. You know, it's not going to be. But
I remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always grumble.
Oh, yeah.
And it was said in one of the, in a book that I once read, it serves to harden them a little.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you want to make sure that it's good. And this is the one area that I think it's important not to just look at the cost and the numbers. I mean,
absolutely.
Make sure that they're reasonably happy with the food.
Okay. When I can say, like, I eat here every Friday for the Rotary Club, and the food's good. And my daughter's been coming with me because she's out of school. So my 10-year-old wants to come with me to eat here on Friday. She likes it.
And of course, what we get is lovely. I mean, you know, it's bad. I mean, you know, but we aren't necessarily eating exactly what the students are eating.
Right, and y'all go through the line. The service clubs go through the line just like the students. Yeah.
Just want to take care of our students.
Absolutely, and we also the way that this it is we're. We are going down the path of recommending a five-year or 10.
The last one was 10 years.
10-year.
And that sounds like a long time. And if you remember, we did the electrical contract for a long time. These rates do change every year, but we have a 90-day out clock at any point, and they do as well. If we want to change, we can lock in what we've got with them and but the rates will change it, but the agreement will stay. But we can get out 90 days anytime we want to. So
yes.
It's a 10-year contract, but yeah.
The other thing that when we were looking at the investment piece, if we'd gone down that, basically we're letting them, we're borrowing the money, you know, for investment in our kitchens. And that's both our SWID and Big Spring campus upgrades. And had we gone down that path, and if we had a scenario where we decided that we wanted, you know, that we were going to get out and we were going down a 90-day, then we would have to pay back part of that investment proportionately. And so, you know, we just felt like that it's better just looking at the numbers. Brenda ran the numbers over a 10-year period. It's better for us to do it's a better business decision not to put the investment into the contract, us go down the path of pulling that money from fund balance or general operating.
It was reflected in the daily rate.
Yeah.
The daily rate was higher because that's how they were getting our money.
Right. Yeah. So the students have to pay more. Anything that we are doing, we have to pay more. So that's one of the reasons that after that comp was done, looking at the three, then we just kept analyzing it because we could do that then because of the RFP process then because we were zeroing in on Great Western. Then we started the negotiation process of, okay, what happens if we do this? Because as we looked at it, we thought that could be it's a better price point for the students and the college. Because remember, whenever we do scholarships, then that's going to cost the college because we're going to be paying, you know. So, okay.
Further questions?
Steve, one thing that you didn't mention that they might be interested in is that I think in the past there was a separate contract for campuses.
Yes.
Announced together as one?
It's together. I think it started, I can't say when it started, but I think it started because of the way the state did Swiss budget. Everything was set up. Swiss had its own contract. But we put those contracts. And I think it actually made
We wanted to make sure, again, that there was no difference in between.
We're almost there.
True. Anyway, between the campuses relative to service. And felt like that one contract would help us do that.
Any further discussion? I understand a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Have a motion to have a second.
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The motion carries. Vendor machines?
Okay. Well, vending machines are very interesting. there's not a lot of people out there wanting to bid on vending machines. When we did vending machines, we did not answer the machine several years ago. We had trouble getting but we put out, because it came up in some of the student roundtables, they were wanting the vending machine in LaMesa, so we put that out. And unfortunately, we did not get anybody that wanted to, which we sent out that thing. We had nobody call about that. And so we would ask your approval to close that RFP. It's 22-006 for LaMesa and want to move on. We'll either do another one and try to find somebody, but this one was not successful. That one, you need to do both of them at the same time, or do you want to?
No, I've already done the first one on the West Great Western.
No, I mean, there's another snack machine.
Sure, yes.
Okay. All right, and then we did 22-07, which was for LaMesa, which was a vending machine for LaMesa. And we had a gentleman who had...
Miss San Angelo.
We currently have vending machines there now. We did have a gentleman that's been very interested and wants to bid on it. And so he did, and so he was the only one that submitted an RFP, but it's Brandon Enterprise.
Brandon.
Does he have someone going to service those machines there in LaMesa?
Sir?
Do you have someone there? And his company's going to service those
yes,
in LaMesa?
Yes, he is in the LaMesa area.
Oh, there.
San Angelo, right?
San Angelo.
Yeah. LaMesa is the one that we didn't have anybody,
yeah.
And San Angelo is the one we did.
I'm sorry.
That's why I was saying that over here. I'm trying to get y'all on the same page.
So there's no one going to be servicing LaMesa?
That is correct. There's nobody.
We're just approving the one in San Angelo.
Well, you have to, because of the LaMesa, you have to, since there was an RFP out there, or a contract bid out there, you have to, basically, you are closing it because we had...
Closing one.
Yeah, you have to close that one.
So we're
and then we'll
the
go
one
back.
In San Angelo, and we're closing the one in LaMesa.
Yes, sir. And then we can still go out for another time for LaMesa if there's anybody that starts showing up that's interested. But in the meantime, in our roundtables, that was one of the things that came up on the LaMesa campus is how to take care of that. And so our SGA... in LaMesa has already been working on ideas so that we can provide some snack options for our LaMesa campus, and it may be like a little fundraiser for our Student Government Association on LaMesa.
Great. If everyone understands what's going on, I don't. But I'll stand motion to approve this.
I'll make a motion.
I have the motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Gratefully, we'll move on to library and music building.
Well, as you know, Both of those buildings are going to be renovated. So we have asbestos issues, and so, and also we have at SWID building that needs asbestos abatement. And so, in order to, there's two RFPs for them. The Big Spring campus is one, SWID is one. But in order to get the best value from a contractor coming in, we bid them together. I mean, we bid them together, although there's two RFPs. Get the best value so we could find somebody hopefully that would do all of them cheaper. So on the RFP 2202, which is Big Spring, you'll see there was several alternates to it, and the Big Spring campus is the first three, the 34,175, the 35,000, the 50, and the 12,000, which is 81,825. And those were done with a gentleman that we used that worked with us on asbestos. And the two companies that bid on it was are listed Banco and Advanced, and the one that came through that was the best value, cheapest, in this case was Banco, and we did look at it based on dollars.
Is this SWID?
This is Howard.
For Howard.
This is
the two that are for SWID further down, are they paid for?
Yes, and the two for SWID further down are the $32,100, and then if that building is demolished, they went ahead and gave us, because the contractor asked, the gentleman we worked with, consultant, asked for him to go ahead and do the demolition of the structure, it's $92,500, and so both of those are $124,000. And I don't even want to speak to that one. If that building goes down, it's a diagnostic center. They will have to build a basis, because that's a basis to take this.
So the music and library, so everybody knows, those have been, there has been abatement in the past, but what happens when you disturb more, and you know, then you, and because of the renovation, it's going to result in that. So there's going to have to be some additional abatement in the music and the library. And so the music building is the $34,175, and the library is the $35,650. And then we ask as an additional alternate, we're thinking that we need, even though right now we don't have an issue with needing to abate some floor tile as a part of the process, we just think it's a smart thing to do because of some things that we're looking at. So that then results in the one for the library being $47,650 and the one for the music building being $34,175. Those would be part of the Howard College Big Spring budget, and we have some funds that were set aside, not specifically for that, but repair and rehab kinds of things. When you get to the SWID, the Diagnostic Center, when we were going down the path last summer as part of the budget, you remember you put money in for demolition of the SWID buildings, and then also, not the buildings, but the diagnostic center. And then also we had looked at the parking, the parking lot. And y'all remember you did that last month. And that's in a part of that interlocal agreement with the city of Big Spring. Well, we got a good enough bid on that. We saved some money that we could put toward demolition. So now we're in a scenario where, and we've looked at the budget and looked at our numbers and everything, where not only can we go ahead and abate the building, because we knew when you start looking at demolition, then you have to start thinking abatement. So since we were going out for music and library, we pulled that in. But the guy said, you know, let's go ahead and put that alternate in there to do the demolition. This is going to be the cheapest time we're going to be able to not only abate that building, but demolition take place. I'll warn you right up front, when we do the abatement on our music and our library, particularly our music building, it's going to look like we're in the middle of, you know, I don't want to say a war. That's not a word to use right now, but the windows are going to be boarded, you know, a storm. We're going to look like we've just been through a storm. We're going to have wind, you know. Well, the same thing is going to happen with that building out at SWID. You know, it's going to be pulled apart. you know. And so then we're just going to still be wanting to take that building down. And that was the original intent, but the money, what we had initially projected on taking the building down was, as far as what we budgeted, was less with what was coming back. But all this pulling this together with what happened with the bid that came back on the paving, we have money. We can do both. We can not only abate at the SWID campus, but we can take the building down. And so that's what we're recommending, because if it will just be more expensive later. You know, the more that we wait, you know, prices are just probably going to be going up. So, does that make sense?
Sort of. I guess what I'm saying, you sort of partly answered it.
Okay.
Because SWID's budget comes completely from the state.
Correct. I'm sorry, I didn't answer that. Yes.
The separate line item.
Yes, sir.
At least the majority of the SWID abatement and deconstruction has come from the state, so we're just
all of it will.
So there's no issue there, and so we can just do that because basically we're arranging the work, but they're paying for it.
Yes, the money that we get for SWID does not have the same requirements that we do. We cannot use state funding to do anything brick and mortar on any of our Big Spring, San Angelo, or La Mesa campuses, because we cannot use state funding for brick and mortar. But for SWID, we can.
So we're cool.
We can. So
most of this RFP basically is going to have been paid for by the state.
Everything for SWID, yes, sir.
So, and that's most of it. So we're cool.
And if you can see, it's like $83,000 difference between the two bids. The bid that we're recommending.
Yeah, no, that was okay. I just was looking at where the funding is.
Right.
Funding source was.
Right.
Because where I know SWID is separately funded, then I was hoping that this was in there.
Right.
Just because
it is.
Just to make sure that we're.
It is. Yes.
Clean.
Yes. No tax. Yes, because there's no tax money. That's all state funding.
State money, so it's wonderful.
Okay. Any further discussion or questions?
I make a motion that we approve this.
Thank you very much. Do I have a second? Okay. A second. From Adrian, I believe. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any favor, noes? Motion approved. Thank you. All right, I'll move on to registered medical assistant.
All right, Mr. Chairman, if you'll let me, I'll take in that next one, too, two
you
and
please?
Three.
Yes, please.
As a part of what we have to do for the coordinating board, and Amy, you want to go ahead and talk about it? Mark, I should have told you could leave a long time ago.
I wanted to.
So
the coordinating board requires the governing board to approve any new programs. And so today we're bringing forth a registered medical assistant associate of applied science. We currently have a certificate one, but they want to extend that to offer an AAS degree that will give students more opportunity, as well as financial, hopefully, increases in pay if they're in the field. And then the second one is a pharmacy. Pharmacy technician certificate, and this I'm excited about both of them. But this one is actually a continuing education workforce training certificate, and it will be more than 360 contact hours, and that is a threshold at which, if it goes over that, we have to bring it to you for approval, and then I have to submit that to the coordinating board. So those are just two new programs we're asking for your permission to move forward with the coordinating board.
And those are mainly coming out of our San Angelo campus, but we would be able to also present these, offer these on other locations if we choose to do so.
All right, that sounds great. I know all of our medical programs we have so far are very successful. Entertain a motion to approve these two, please. Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Handbook and catalog changes.
Okay. I'm going to ask Amy to keep standing there on the catalog, but let me, real quick, an employee handbook, policy 6.13. Basically, this is an update to an existing policy as it relates to instructional projects. Amy, you may want to tell a little bit about that.
Yes, you know, sometimes we get requests and maybe what a community business or something wants our welding students to create something for them, or the local signage or something. Well, we found that we really didn't have any guidelines to guide procedures, to kind of keep things common, who pays for what, liability things. So we created this statement to put in our handbook, and then there is a template that I neglected to share as part of this. But we've got just an agreement that we sign with the company and Howard College, so we all understand who's responsible for the work.
And that we are always keeping that everything legal. You know, we want to make sure that those things are being approached appropriately, and that also, you know, it needs to be a project that works with the instructional objectives, and so that's also part of what is taken into consideration.
All right.
Yes, please.
On the catalog changes, I will not describe everyone in detail, but to point out the first page, as Dr. Sparks, you know, were talking about earlier, takes into consideration the tuition increase. We are proposing $10 out of district, and as well as $10 for non-resident, other than the SWID non-resident rate that's set by the state. We don't have a choice in that. And just moving on, then the room and board charges, it reflects the increases in the board charges based on the information that Steve presented to you. And then the next page is just a list of fee changes. It always amazes me, you know, how things go up. But some of the larger increases are because things are moving to software that the programs have to buy instead of just their normal reviews that they've been doing. And then the next, I know, two or three pages, just changes in financial aid, federal guideline wording that Candace makes sure we have accurate in our handbook, in our catalog. The Texas Success Initiative, Susan Strickland, she's our leader there, and she made sure that the catalog has the most updated scores for that assessment for students. That reflects that. And then so moving on to curriculum program changes. Again, this first, page 8, our registered medical assistant certificate, they changed this one course in there. And then that goes on to show you the outline of the curriculum for the there is a new certificate that they are proposing, a substance abuse counseling certificate. This does not need to have your approval as far as signing that initial new program form, because we currently have a code and a certificate under it, and the program that we have an AASN. And then you'll see changes to the instructional aid certificate and AAS degree on pages 10 and 11. And then our computer and information sciences program, they got together and they made drastic changes. They streamlined those programs, where you'll see we're moving from probably 5 different specializations to one information technology program that I think is going to be much stronger and, again, more streamlined into what the workforce needs. They did the Certificate 1, the Certificate 2, and the Associate of Applied Science degree. They made changes to that. Then you'll see minor changes in the College of Oncology Facial Specialist Certificate. STEP Support Specialist Certificate Level 1. And the AAS, there are changes. Building Construction, Maintenance Technology, they made some changes. Welding Certificate, they added some different courses and rearranged things. Little Lab, Technology, and then you'll see all of the Computer and Information Sciences former degrees and certificates that we are removing because they condensed those to one program. You'll also note, if you're wondering why, when it starts in the middle of the page, it's Social Science, Associate of Science, and English, Associate of Science. Through the pathways work that our arts and sciences faculty have been doing, we still have a social sciences and associate of arts degree as well as English. There was a lot of repetitiveness in the associate of science and associate of arts work, so there's a lot of work through the pathways to streamline those as well. Minor changes in automotive maintenance technician, the visual communication technology, and then on page 20 it just starts some changes in courses. And I probably should have started out by saying in Dr. Bechtig, these are the most changes once a year, right? Adrian always because this is the time of year when we tell them the deadline. I think we try to go for April 1st, get all your catalog changes in. But then we hope to bring this to you at this meeting, and then you will reaffirm the catalog, the calendar's part of this, approval, if you so choose to approve that. That's why it's so important that I try, but it never fails. We have some catalog changes throughout the year, but it's never ending. And then point out one thing, on page 22, the Instructional Council meets. We've met once or twice in the fall. We met once this spring, sorry, my time's getting away. They all recommendations go to an instructional council, which is a group-wide council that approves these, and this year they are, we want to add geography, we want to change physical geography from a life and physical science course to a social behavioral science course, and then add humanities. 1315, we want to add that to the board. And those changes do have to go to the planning board for approval after you sign off on it. And then again, the last page is the pharmacy tech certificate. I just wanted to have the curriculum outline so you can see that with the catalog changes. And that was a lot, but I'm happy to answer any questions. You do have the academic calendar in your board package. So that will be part of this approval as well with the catalog.
And then as Amy mentioned, you'll also, as a part of this, Mr. Chairman, you reaffirm the rest of the catalog annually, so you'll do that with these changes.
All right.
Thank you.
Any questions? Comments? Need a motion?
I'll move.
Have a motion approved. I have a second.
Second.
I have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Catalog changes are accepted. Well, factory contract.
Okay. Every year in April, we present to you the list of faculty that are recommended for next year. And so that represents the faculty from across the district. And then we prepare the budget accordingly with these positions in place.
Anyone listed nobody likes?
Look, can I just make sure I'm understanding this? Is this the entire faculty roster, or is this just the ones that have to be renewed this year and there are some that are on a different schedule?
This is everybody.
This is everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about pay scale and so forth, this is the ones we're talking about.
Correct. And then these positions then, this is the individuals, and so we will begin the process for the contracts, and they'll get letters letting them know that they've been approved for next year. And then the budget, then we'll put the budget together this summer using these positions. Some of the, you'll see vacant, there are some vacant positions that they're in the budget right now, but they will go ahead and they'll start off in the budget process.
Question. So I don't see anyone on LAMESA here?
We don't have any full-time faculty on the LAMESA campus. What happens is the Big Spring campus faculty mainly provide the instruction. However, some of the online, they will literally go to the campus.
Okay.
But then we do have some online faculty from other campuses that also are part of that delivery. We do have some adjuncts in LAMESA, but just not full-time.
Need a motion to approve these.
Oops.
Have a motion, have a second.
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approve. Opposed? All righty. New positions.
Okay. As you know, as a part of the process, whenever you approve the budget in the summer, then if we have a position that comes open, then we simply go down the process of posting it, filling it, and letting you know. But when it's a new position that has not been a part of the approved budget, then we bring it back for your consideration to add in. And basically what this one is, it's a part-time and then that was in place, and then some funding that's in another account. Basically, we're pulling together. As you all know, we lost Kenneth Ubretsi back in January, and he was part-time doing the mail room and doing the delivery. And we missed Kenneth. He did a lot across the campus as far as helping with delivering of packages and just very, very helpful. At the same time, in the Coliseum, we also always need additional help in the Coliseum and have money in the budget for part-time help. So this is an effort to make a full-time position, because that will be able to attract more interest in that. And so that's what we're recommending.
Okay. Have a motion to approve.
So moved.
Have a second. Have a second. All in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Faculty retirement resolution.
We do not have any faculty retiring at this time, but again, we always ask for your authority to prepare any appropriate resolutions in case that happens for your signature prior to graduation.
Okay. Do you approve that?
Yes, sir.
I have a motion to approve that.
So moved.
I have a motion. I have a second. All in favor say aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Professor Emeritus, not my nation.
Okay. The Professor Emeritus, as you know, there is a process for this as well. And in order for a person to be considered for Professor Emeritus, there has to be at least three nominations that come forward for an individual. And there are four for this individual, and it's Tommy Toon, who recently, I guess Tommy's been retired about 3-4 years, something like that. And so we have those recommendations, and Tommy then has been recommended by faculty, and we submit for your approval.
Have a motion to approve that?
So moved.
Have a motion, have a second?
Second.
Have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. On to the next item, construction renovation.
Okay, so this is, we're going to have a little more to talk about today, but we'll start with the normal, which just giving you updates on the Big Spring and SWID roof project. But I'm going to ask, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, I'm going to ask Terry and Fabian both to come up here, because we're going to be also, as a part of the report today, we're also going to be intertwining the rain event that we had early Sunday morning and the impact that it has had. So you guys want to come on up here and start trying to work through this?
add to the devastation?
You want to start just the, maybe okay. Just the regular.
Just the regular.
And then we'll get into the other.
It's hard to even think about the regular with everything that's happened.
But that's true.
This has been an interesting last couple of weeks, really. The wind that we've had and then of course the rain yesterday. Most of the work has been focused on the dorms. There was a problem found and has now been corrected with the decking, and that was found through some of the inspections that we do, and it's important that those kind of things are done, because as Phil Perkins was explaining today, he said, you know, if we had not caught that, there would have been leaks later that would have been really hard to find. But we found the condition. It's been corrected. And so both dorms are almost, and I don't know if you've seen the report or not, but both dorms are almost ready for the top sheet.
How old are those dorms?
How old?
Especially the men's dorm.
Well, I guess the original wings were built, I believe, in 64. And then the additions were 80s.
Okay.
And then we did a major renovation on those kind of at the end of the bond project too, the student housing fund. We were able to pay for those with revenue bonds. So. You know, the buildings are, I mean, they have good bones, but they are, you know, they're...
Be old.
They're getting old. But they're well built.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't have a whole lot to offer. I know that Martin Riley, with WCR, is on campus, and we met this morning, and he told me he had an update to give me on the materials, and you've probably seen in the reports the materials that have been ordered for the Coliseum. But we never got around to that before we had to break, and we were going to do some inspections. So I'm hoping that those materials will be, you know, on site before too long, so the Coliseum work can be done. Once the dorms are finished, we'll move to things like the security building. And the Coliseum. So, and I guess I'll let. Well, I guess as a prelude to what Fabian's going to talk about, we had a rather significant, a very significant rain event the morning of the 24th, and we did have some water intrusion from the roof, but. It wasn't all from the roofs. There was so much water that, like the Coliseum ramp water ejection system, there's a trough drain there, couldn't handle the flow of water. And
I heard it's 7 inches of rain.
Mm-hmm.
I heard y'all measured 7 inches of rain.
Well, I don't know if we have a rain gauge on campus. The largest rain gauge probably... on campus is the Horace Garrett building.
it ran over.
We got up, and we don't know why yet. We have a contractor up there, a mechanical contractor, looking at the roof drains. The roof drains did not perform, and when we got here, and some of the water had already spilled over through the overflow, but. There was still 5 inches of water on top of that building, and which is a lot of weight. We calculated it something just shy of about 400,000 pounds of weight. But it is a big building, so it was spread over a large area, but that's still a lot of water. And then there we did have, I think, 4 rooms in the dorms at Lakes Course. Those roofs are not finished yet. they're just in the process of completion. So they're not fully roofed. So that's probably attributable to that. Water came in under doors. There's a few places that on roofs that have been worked on that had small leaks, and we will be addressing those. The rain certainly points those out to us. So.
For our guest, I'm sitting here thinking, y'all don't know what we're talking about. But all of us in this room, because we've all been dealing with it over the last day, so the rain event that happened on early Sunday morning, we think that maybe Howard College got all of it. We're not sure, but we think we got a good part of it. And so we have been dealing with, I guess Fabian started getting calls around 3 on Sunday morning. And so we ended up that our Coliseum, we have 3 inches of water all the way back. I know that you were, back where Marie was for the concert. We had water all the way back to those dressing rooms in the Coliseum, and that was created by the ramp area. It wasn't a roof issue. It was because the ramp, and for the entry to the event that night, a lot of people took the ramp, and so we had an issue there. Fabian will talk more about that in a minute. And then we also, as Terry was making comment, and we're all laughing, and I'm watching y'all, and y'all are going, kind of what? And so, because everybody's been made aware, but we ended up, as Terry said, or, Fabian, somebody said, the Horace Garrett building was our rain gauge, because on the top of the building, it's a flat roof, so we literally... It looked like Mr. Barr made the comment that it looked like a frack tank.
A frack pit,
because we just big old expanse of water. Probably what do you think, guys? Inches?
It was about 5 inches. Deep.
About 5 inches. So we're pretty sure we have had at least 5 inches. And then the McKinney building. We had issues with that, basically structure, again, Fabian will talk a little bit about that. But then as Terry was making comment, probably every building on the campus was touched, but those three were the ones that were the most significant. Our Swift campus, really,
a couple minor leaks.
Yeah, I mean, it just, as I say, we kind of feel like it just kind of dumped all on the Big Spring campus. The retention ponds, a lot of people are not even aware that we have retention ponds that are over by the ag complex. Those are in place on purpose because of what has happened before with runoff, because of the contour of the campus. And they were all full. That's the first time we remember them all being full. And so that water was then flowing down into the neighborhoods, the neighborhoods had issues as well. But those ponds helped keep that from being as significant. So that worked well, those retention ponds. But then we have some issues with. What the guys are going to talk about next, we had the regular little project going and making progress on that. Now we have this rainstorm. Now we've got issues we've got to deal with, and some of it relates to the roofing project and some of it does not. So y'all figure out how you're going to talk about that.
Where do you want to start?
Go ahead.
I guess we can start with explain the extent of the damage.
Go for it.
Okay. So if you can imagine the McKinney building, the north face of the McKinney building, that's all offices and classrooms pretty much from one end to the other. And so I would say all but maybe one, right, of those classrooms and offices has significant damage where the ceiling grid has collapsed on top of desks, on top of computers, water all over the place.
And may I add,
yes.
Fabian, that remember, we've also, and we're going to be talking in a minute about our library music building renovation and what we're doing on that, we've already emptied a good portion of those buildings, and some of the music building materials are in this space we're talking about.
Pianos, record albums, books, sheets, lots of things. Almost everything in there is wet. I spoke with Mr. Watt this morning. He's thinking that those pianos that are in there, they're ruined. He hasn't been able to assess the electronics that are in there, but he's thinking that it's probably affected as well, too.
Our insurance company is not going to be very happy with us.
I will address that. The Coliseum will be on our insurance, all that, because that was a failure of one of our systems. The Horse Garrett and McKinney will fall back to the roofing contractor's insurance. Because there was part of the problem at McKinney was roof drains again. So roof drains were the culprit in both instances. And we know that building can drain because many of us lived here a long time. We remember that event back in the mid-80s when the dam broke at the city lake or the Coston Lake or whatever. That was probably actually a larger rain event than this one was, but we did not have any problems at that. Mm-hmm.
Coliseum, when we got to the Coliseum yesterday, we couldn't open that overhead door. It was pushed back about a foot into the Coliseum itself, and that was all from the pressure of the water and the debris. We looked at, you can see a debris line, what is it, about 2 feet?
Yeah, 18 inches to 2 feet. Yeah. It's pretty high.
It was about that deep. So we were able to open up one door. We took a sledgehammer to it. We were able to move it back into place so we could open it up. And like what Dr. Sparks was saying, there's about 3 inches of water from the base of that ramp all the way to the west end of the Coliseum into those locker rooms, offices. And so we started trying to squeegee that water out, but it was like we're never going to finish that. The service master showed up yesterday with a large vacuum cleaner, truck-mounted vacuum cleaner. So they showed up yesterday, started that around maybe 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, somewhere around that time. And then I know they said they stayed here in the Horace Garrett building until about 4 o'clock this morning. I think they stayed in the Coliseum until about 11 o'clock last night, something like that, but they're still working in the Coliseum extracting water. They have 2 desiccants, so they're like industrial-sized dehumidifiers, or what, like on a 20-foot trailer maybe? These are big dehumidifiers. There will be 2 in the Coliseum, 2 in the McKinney building, and right now there's 1 running at the Horse Garrett building.
Yeah, I saw those when I drove in today.
Yeah. I talked to them about graduation in the Coliseum. That's taking place on the 13th. He's hoping that it'll be all taken care of by the 13th, and if not, we'll be near that time. We'll be close to being finished with it. He said he could remove his equipment. We can have graduation in there and then return all the equipment that he needs to return in there. But he felt confident in that he should be able to finish everything by or before graduation in the Coliseum.
Cool.
The McKinney building.
Right. He was looking at this list. I mean, I'm astounded because I don't live at this part of town, and we didn't have this. We had some rain, but it wasn't like this. No debris. It seems like just about every building on campus has had leaks and problems. Now, considering the roofing work we were having done, which was not hitting all of these buildings, just some of them, do we know, or is it just maybe too soon to know why we had leaks in so many buildings? I mean, Howard Cottage has leaks. Everything has leaks.
you know, Turner has leaks, you know, damage. The sub has leaks here. Do we have any handle on why we just have everything leaked?
I think it's going to be multiple answers. You know, in some places water came under doors, and other places, you know, our buildings had not been, or they were in various states of completion. And in some, we thought they were complete, and we still had leaks, so we're going to have to.
Under doors is not much you can do. I mean, that's.
Right.
But then you don't usually, if you have water under doors, you don't usually have ceiling tiles coming in.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's a different thing. But it just seems like, you know, I'm just looking at this list, and you're just astounded at how many buildings and how many, you know, I mean, a lot of these buildings we haven't discussed before for the roofing project, so that, you know, have we got roofing issues that we don't know about?
Well, I'll also add that we weren't the only ones that had problems with roofs. The refinery, for example, one of their tanks, one of those lids on one of those huge tanks, it all collapsed. I know our neighbors, Big Spring ICF, all they had rugs over the chain link fence.
Oh, I'm not faulting Howard College
per se, but
I mean, it was obviously an event, you know, in the area. It just strikes me, it's just so, you know.
I think we're going to find, and I think that, you know, as you're alluding to, and then I think the guys are too, and some of you are not aware, we put together on Sunday morning, Lee and Brandon went through every single building and were looking for all the water damage they could find, and then we've continued adding to it. But I think what's going to happen is we're going to find varying reasons, as Terry was saying. In some instances, I think it's going to be something to do with WCR. That's going to be their responsibility.
And those are I've taken those out of my head.
Yeah.
That's their problem.
Right.
Okay, the building wasn't complete, but I mean, but all these buildings that are,
and I'll also add that some are just insignificant little stains in the ceiling grid, but of course it's a leak.
Some are from
one extent to the other.
Yeah, and so we will. To your point, John, the fact that in some instances it will be our insurance. And so what also happened on Sunday is Steve went ahead and contacted our agent, put them on notice that we had this event. At the same time, ServiceMaster, basically they're going to be working two claims because some of it's going to be handled by WCR and some of it's going to be handled by Howard College Insurance. So it's going to take some time to run through and figure this out, but you're right. I mean, it's startling, the number of places on campus.
Well, if you take out the WCR, the buildings WCR is dealing with, and that's their insurances, and if you take out the water under the door stuff particularly, because I know that, I mean, that's just really not much you can do about that, and then you mop it up and it's the end of it. But, you know, you dry the rug out or something. But, you know, how much of this, you know, if we got leaks in everywhere else, you know, it's possible, but, you know, now we've got to go and find those leaks. And they may be, like you say, very, very small, but there's a leak somewhere, and it's going to have to be patched or addressed or somewhere. So it's going to keep a bunch of people busy for a lot.
Yeah.
And I know personal strength is trying to find leaks, particularly if it's very small. Yeah, that's not always easy.
Yeah.
You can also consider the fact that some of your business are years old.
Yeah.
In time, you're going to find certain things that weren't there from where there's a flat roof or maybe more brick and mortar will eventually wear out. Just some of our buildings, this particular brain bought some of the damage, but we got structures that are very old, so in time we're going to find damages that normally you wouldn't find because of the weather. So it may be windows, ceilings to color them that's damaged. So we got buildings that are very old, and in time, the structure does give in a different way. You know, so we have to address it at the time, whatever hits us, storms or hail or whatever.
Just have to deal with it.
Yeah. So we will be trying to continue with the normal roofing project, and then we'll have these other variances that we'll be working with.
You know, on a positive note, I'm glad we found it out now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than, you know, 6 months or a year from now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the roofers are still here. We certainly were put to the test.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not implying any criticism. No, you guys didn't do it. But I'm just going, oh, my God, I mean, you've got to start going through every building now and trying to find the roof leaks. Right?
Yeah.
It's like...
There's no doubt that rain...
It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
I guess this is probably halfway, including the library project, which is the next item on our agenda.
Yeah, so... Last I heard, the library and music, their building, there were no leaks.
Typical buildings that we're going to tear apart anyway don't have leaks, but everything else does.
Yeah, and we've moved everything to all the buildings that are leaking. So.
Yeah.
Well, so... On the library and music building, though, and I want to compliment these guys, and then also, my goodness, we've had so many people that have been working so hard on all of this. Steve putting all the bids in the paper. I mean, there is so much going on. Brenda trying to keep up with the money, making sure that people aren't spending money they don't need to be spending. I mean, there's just so much that's happening. I can't say enough about what everybody's doing. And all the guys that were here, I mean, you know, before Service Master came up, people were just doing their part to probably felt like it was kind of a, we're doing this because why? Trying to put that water down drains. And anyway, so it's pretty crazy. But in the middle of all this, you would have also seen over the weekend as we had you approved the abatements on the music and the library building, and then, of course, what we're doing over at the SWIT campus. There was also in the paper then the notices for the RFPs for the music and the library buildings. And so those are out there for people to start expressing interest and submitting bids for those buildings to be renovated. And Fabian, Terry, Steve, I can't remember off the top of my head, when are those supposed to open, Steve? May not, maybe? Something like that.
I think no.
Okay, 17th.
Later than we.
Yeah. So they'll open on the 17th. And then we have the board meeting on the 23rd, so we'll be bringing it to you on that date. Everybody be doing a lot of praying, because this is we've got people that are going to be bidding on projects, you know, during a time that there's a lot of supply chain issues, but we have talked with our architects and the products that are going to be going into. To these buildings are not ones that have as much problem with supply chain. We're not doing new constructions. We don't have a steel issue. We're not adding concrete. I saw something today that, you know, that some of the road projects in the state are being delayed because of concrete and steel. But this, you know, these projects don't include that. So we feel like we're good that way. Just seeing what happens. So. We're moving along. We'll be bringing it back to you in May.
Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate you. No, there's not a blasted thing you can do about it.
Yep.
All right. Our next item on the agenda, student information systems.
All right. Eric's here to give an update, and we got some good information.
Good afternoon. Things are progressing along. Servers have been ordered. We're still waiting on ETAs on shipping and server configuration. So in the meantime, 3D Technologies, the company helping us do the data migration, wanted us to find kind of a backup solution. So we have our data center that we use kind of as a cloud backup, and we run servers out of in Houston. And so we've been talking to them, and they've set up some temporary servers in Houston in their data center for us to use for our CAMS installation. And so we're gonna run off of those until we get our hardware installed in the data center here. And so that was completed last week. 3D Technologies that's doing the migration was given access, and they're scheduling the installation with Thesis, who is the parent company. So they're hoping to complete that this week sometime. And then I think it was May 2nd and 3rd, right? May 2nd and 3rd, they're going to start doing module overviews with our power users. So it'd be like the registrar, Laura Fitzpatrick, who owns the billing office and financial aid. So they want to start getting people in, looking at the system. They won't really be interacting with the system necessarily a whole lot at that point, but they just want them to start looking at data. And and so at that point, once the installation in Houston is complete, they've been doing data migration off and on. And so they think that financial aid, registrar admissions, and student billing data is, they have scheduled 3 or 4 data passes. So they think that those 3, the first pass is ready. So once the Houston install is completed, they'll move that data into the software. And then part of the module overviews will be kind of showing everyone what Howard College did with the product. So I think one of the things that they mentioned as part of that process is the student billing process is going to be really different in a different software, and so they're going to start working with Laura pretty heavily on how we translate, how we charge students, and how the student bills and some of those things are going to look. And so it's a pretty complicated process that they think is going to take a little time to translate from the old system to the new system. So they want to get a jump start on that as well. But anything else? I think that's it.
Yeah. So we're making progress. And so, it is. And so, based on the call this morning, we could have the CAMS product on our servers by the end of this week.
Yes.
And then, as Eric was saying, then our people can start, because the data migration is going on too. And so then we can start, next week, start working on some of the look. So, it's moving. Yeah.
Sounds like it's up to getting the physical servers here.
Yes, right now. They're waiting on different parts. They have like the server chassis they have. It's just different components that make up the server. They can't find answers on certain parts of those servers. So there's no definite timeline yet on when those will actually be here.
And that's one of the reasons we ended up going with Quasar. Y'all remember is our backup in Houston, and so we came up with an alternative solution so we could get moving. But again, the computers, that's part of the supply chain issue.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Thank you. We appreciate you. President's report.
Okay, I'm going to make this real short. You have your calendar on the activities. We've given you a couple of those. I won't go through all of that. Some of you are involved in the SWIFT Foundation meeting this Thursday. We also point out to you that, you know, this Friday we'll have some recognition of some donors as a part of our baseball day, and then the following Friday we'll be doing softball. And then, again, just a lot of events that will continue on until we get to the 23rd, all the pinnings, all the graduation ceremonies. Again, I won't go over all those because we've been talking about those. And recognitions, let me just real quick, I want to point out that our livestock judging team did really well. And they were in a contest at ACU a couple weeks ago, and we had students, again, do really well. We got third place overall as far as chapter sweepstakes, but we had students that had some first-place students and second and fourth. They did well, and you have that information. But this is posted up, but we're very proud of those students. And then, just for legislative information, we're making, as far as the Community College Finance Commission, it's moving along. We're the Texas Association of Community Colleges. We're finalizing our recommendations to them. But we are having a conversation with the state leadership who's very interested in what we're doing as a part of the commission. And so hopefully that's going to bode well for us as we go into the legislative session. And that would then be everything we talked about today. We've prepared you for the May 23rd board meeting. It'll be a full one. And that would be all that I would have, unless you have a question for me.
Well, I definitely don't have anything. Therefore, by authority granted by the governor of Texas, this meeting is adjourned.
Yes, sir. This will actually be my last board member serving on the...
How many years?
Because next month, May 7th, the election, so you'll have a new board trustees on the 24th. You'll have a new...
Yes, but what will happen? You don't get out that easy yet, Mr. Michael. So what will happen is that the oath and all that has to happen on the 23rd. And so actually we'll be setting the agenda up in such a way for you to be able to be involved in some discussions, because of course the new Raul being new, there's going to be some information that I'm not going to have the background on. We'll get him caught up. Yes, sir. We want you here on the 23rd. Yes, sir. And your family members, because we'll recognize you. And so, yeah.
Get a pat on the back.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is, yeah, not that easy, buddy. You're back. Okay.
Well, I had to stumble home.
I was able to hear
you. Probably fall asleep in the chair. I got to go.
Okay.
I'll probably fall asleep.
Okay, well, good. You can rest. Thank you. We're in. We're hanging up.
Got it. Yeah.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.